I told the court that I'm wrong to imprison
you. Mr. Assume, you are not to address the jury.
There's too much being hid from you.
You need to be taken out of the court.
There's too much.
He was one small man in a giant wheel caught.
Well, I do wish to say that it's official that I'm wrongfully imprisoned right now.
Uncover, Season 7, Dead Wrong.
I asked him if he killed Pipple. He said yes, and I'd be next.
Available on CBC Listen and wherever you get your podcasts. This is a CBC podcast.
The race is on to find a submersible that vanished while diving on the Titanic shipwreck. Five people were on board.
The sub, which is the size of a minivan, needs to be found before oxygen runs out for the men on board.
American aircraft and ships have been sent to scour the area, and a French vessel with a deep-sea robot on board is being rushed in. But time is running out.
It was a deep-sea disaster that had many glued to the news. The Titan had gone missing on its way to visit the wreckage of the Titanic off the coast of Newfoundland. The man behind the expedition was a businessman named Stockton Rush. He admitted, even ahead of time, that the submersible he'd built wasn't like anything that had come before it.
I'd like to be remembered as an innovator. I think it was General MacArthur said, "You're remembered for the rules you break." And, you know, I've broken some rules to make this. I think I've broken them with logic and good engineering behind me, the carbon fiber.
Ultimately, that engineering appeared to fail. The Titan had imploded underwater and all five people on board were killed. Now, a new investigation by the Fifth Estate has uncovered multiple warning signs about the sub's design flaws, warnings that went unheeded. Host Mark Kelly joins me now. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Duncan.
Just before we get started, Mark, you were actually sitting in, you were guest hosting The Current at the time that the Titan went down. What went through your head at that time about this story?
Well, at the time, it really struck me as odd that people would pay $250,000 to go into very, very uncharted territory down there in an uncertified, unclassed sub, an experimental sub. I thought at the time it was crazy. And this wasn't a story that I had a lot of sympathy for until I started working on it, Duncan. I spent months working on this story. And then the question that really bothered me and still haunts me is, why was this sub allowed to dive to the Titanic in the first place? Because it was experimental, because it was uncertified. That was a big problem. And that's what really got me interested and sunk my teeth into this story to find out more about this tragedy that did not have to happen.
And you have been working on this for months. So you found out so much. I want to hear more. Let's start with Stockton Rush. Tell me more about this man and how he ended up creating the Titan submersible.
Well, he's a Princeton engineering grad. He was a pilot at the age of 19. He was born, it seemed, to be an explorer. But fundamentally, he was bold. He was brash. He was an adventurer. He was an entrepreneur. At one point, he wanted to be an astronaut. At one point, he wanted to visit, you know, the planets out there. But then he realized that that was going to be very costly and very difficult to do. So then he had his set sight on the ocean. About 95% of the ocean floor has not been explored. And he had heard one thing, and I heard him say this at a convention once, where he said there were three words, English words in the world, that are the most commonly understood: God, Coca-Cola, and Titanic. So put two and two together, and he said, "I'm going to create a business venture taking people to the ocean floor to visit the most storied shipwreck on the planet."
And so he sets out to design this sub. What was different about the Titan compared to other submersibles?
Well, pretty much everything. It was the design. It was the materials used in that design. I mean, typically you've got a spherical, a round design that's made out of titanium. That was all the submarines that go to deep ocean below 4,000 meters would be designed that way. He decides he's going to get a cylindrical. I heard in the opening there somebody compared it to a minivan. It almost looks like a toilet paper roll with caps on either end that are made out of titanium. But that cylinder itself is made out of carbon fiber, which is not used as a material at depths. And it's not used because the incredible, incredible pressure, especially where you're getting down to the level of where the Titanic is at 3,800 meters, the incredible outside force on that carbon fiber, the material is not made to withstand that kind of pressure. And yet, and people warned him, people told him this is not a good way to go forward, and yet he went ahead with what many saw was a really, really risky endeavor.
Well, he was getting warnings all over the place about people uncomfortable with the design, including inside his own company, his own employees. Tell me about that.
Yeah, his own director of marine operations, a fellow named David Lockridge, a Scottish man who had, you know, decades of experience. He was one of the few experts in the world who knew about the design here, and he had to actually go public within the company, at least. He said, look, I've spotted more than two dozen design flaws. Wow. with this thing. This was back in 2018 with the design of the Titan. And he was just worried that this was far too risky. And he said that nobody within the company was listening to him. So, you know, he pointed out, he listed them. He said, I finally have to get this on the record.
How did the company respond?
They fired him. I mean, you know, this was the reaction. He's fired, and then they're threatening to sue him. So Lockridge goes to the U.S. Department of Labor to file a complaint that he's been wrongfully dismissed. And we were able, in our research, through access to information requests, get the thousands of documents, including a recorded conversation between Lockridge and a Department of Labor investigator as he was telling them about some of the flaws in the construction of the vessel.
The sections are an absolute mess. You can see them, they're like Swiss cheese, so when you put a torch at the back of it, you can see all the way through. You can see all the delaminations where the resin has not been bonded properly.
You hear that Scottish brogue as he's just talking about, you know, the putting a torch, a flashlight behind it. You see, like Swiss cheese. He could see, you know, every time it would go down for a dive, it would start to get more porous, this carbon fiber hull. And that's why he was, you know, deeply, deeply concerned about the seaworthiness of this vessel.
Those warnings are going off inside the company, but you said warnings, plural. There are folks outside in the industry who also had concerns. What were they saying about Stockton Rush?
What had happened there, Duncan, is the fact that Lockridge's report was leaked. And then it gets into this very tight-knit community of people who make submarines. There's just not a lot of them who make submarines around the world that aren't government-affiliated. So I spoke to a man named Will Conan. He's a Canadian. He's from Quebec. Grew up in Quebec on a dairy farm, he and his brother, and they now live in California designing and building submersibles. So he's also a part of a group called the Marine Technology Society. So when they had heard about this, you know, the concern that came from Lockridge, they signed an open letter that they wanted to send of him warning about possible catastrophic results of taking this sub down to the Titanic. They were worried it wasn't only bad for that venture itself, it was bad for the industry at large. What they wanted to do was send that letter to Rush, but there were fears that Rush would sue them as he had sued David Lockridge, so they didn't do it. However, the letter ends up being leaked to Stockton Rush.
So what happens when Stockton Rush gets the letter?
Well, he wasn't happy. So it prompted a phone call. Stockton Rush calls the Canadian Will Conan.
Well, he was ticked off. I mean, he was not happy, you know. But in a way, I was happy that he was calling because I wasn't allowed to send it. Right? So it kind of came back. And he says, well, what's this? And it's like, well, you read it, you can see what it is. And says, we're really concerned. And it's like, yeah, well, you know, we're ahead of innovation and the rules are just holding us back. And it's like, look, Stockton, I have as much desire as you to be able to innovate and come up with new ideas that maybe there are not any rules about, but there's a way about going it.
So you went to actually see how Will Conan goes about it. You went down in one of his subs. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was a fascinating experience. And Conan had invited us to come down in his subs. He's been building subs for about 20 years out in California because he wanted to show to us the level of detail, the safety considerations that must be implemented every time you build and dive in a sub. And it was an incredible experience, you know, something I'd never experienced anything like that before.
What's it like being down in one of those subs?
Well, there's a certain element of vulnerability. I can put it that way. First of all, if you have any claustrophobia, it's not a good place for you to be. And we only went, Duncan, to 100 meters. I mean, we're talking, the as I mentioned earlier, the Titanic's at 3,800 meters. But the point here was he wanted to take us down. We had a support vessel that was hovering over us because it had dragged us out into the Pacific Ocean. It had an ROV, a robotic operating vessel, that could come down in the event that we lost contact. But we had, you know, emergency beacons. We had masks on board in case there were fire. There was food on board in case somehow we were to get stranded down there. There's so many levels, contingency plans that were put in place. Everything was there for us. And even on a shallow dive, on a shallow trip, that's what they said is important. And it was certified, classified sub that had been independently examined by an outside agency.
I think everyone around the world was watching this and thinking to themselves, I can't imagine what it'd be like to be so far down and in such tight quarters, so tightly constricted. Did your trip on the sub affect the way that you looked at the story of the Titan at all?
Absolutely. It reinforced how incredibly reckless this venture was. I mean, they're going 36 hours from St. John's Harbor out to the site. And St. John's Harbor is the closest to the site itself. So 36 hours there, 36 hours back. And if something goes wrong, there's no contingency plan. There was no robotic operated vehicle on board the supply vessel that had towed it out there. They didn't even have an emergency beacon on board. The one plan that they had was calling the Coast Guard. We talked to the U.S. Coast Guard. We had an interview with the U.S. Coast Guard. And they said, yeah, they got a call for help. But you know, where they were in Boston, it's 1,500 kilometers away. Ugh. It's about 80 to 90 hours away to get a vessel from as they did, the Coast Guard vessels from where they were in Boston out to the site of the Titanic. This was not a contingency plan.
And I guess the incredible thing about this is he's selling tickets for it eventually. Yep. And your investigation takes you to St. John's Harbor, the launch point for these expeditions. What did you hear about the Titan there?
Well, you know, there were some people who were very familiar. I mean, this is a place that's familiar with disasters at sea. So there were a lot of people there who were a little wary about this operation. However, at the same time, you know, he was a great promoter. I met Colin Taylor, who's a businessman here in Toronto. He had paid to go down the year before the tragic dive. He took his son on one of these Titan expeditions. And I said, how'd you hear about it? He said, well, I heard about it through you guys, being the CBC, because Stockton Rush was a great promoter. Mm. The lieutenant governor she was tweeting about her experience meeting Stockton Rush. He partnered with the Marine Institute, the Memorial University's Research Institute. So he did a great job of building bridges and making friends, but not a lot of people were asking the tough questions about, is this thing safe?
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share 2 hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Was there anyone that was skeptical about it?
Well, we spoke to a man named Larry Daly. Larry's a local operator, a logistics guy. He's actually went to a dive to the Titanic himself in a Russian Mir submarine years ago. And he's worked with James Cameron as well. You know, this guy knows his business. And he saw, it was the spring of 2023. This is just a couple of months before the tragic dive. And what he saw stunned him as he was out in the harbor looking out, because what he could see was, instead of the Titan being on the deck of the ship being taken out to the site of the Titanic, it was being towed on a sort of raft or barge behind the ship.
When I saw the Polar Prince towing the platform in with the submersible on it, and a small little Zodiac towing behind that with a guy sitting in it, coming through the narrows right behind us where we are now, you know, first thing I said, you know, I won't repeat it, but, you know, what the hell are they doing? You know, is that how they're going to get that out to the Titanic site? You know, if this is what they're doing, this is going to end poorly.
Okay, what's wrong with towing it out to sea?
Well, it's just the basic principle that the carbon fiber, and even Stockton Rush would admit this, it has cyclic fatigue. It will wear down at a certain point, especially when it's being subject to a lot of stress. So imagine you're putting this thing on a, you know, a barge behind, and you're towing it 36 hours out to the site and back over and over and over again. It's just that added stress that it's putting on the hull, which has a shelf life. However, by towing it out there, you could do it far It was far cheaper than actually putting it on the deck of the ship.
Was there any way that, any Canadian officials, any of the agencies that are responsible for maritime safety, could have intervened at that point?
Well, I mean, that's one of the key questions, Duncan, we have with our investigation. And we wanted to get interviews with Transport Canada, with the Coast Guard, with the Port Authority, but none of them would talk to us on camera. But they said at the end of the day, there's nothing that they could do. The Coast Guard is there for search and rescue. Port Authority was guiding it in and out of the harbor safely, but it was up to Transport Canada. If anyone was going to be able to intervene and inspect the vessel, it was Transport Canada. So we reached out to them and said, well, why didn't you do that? And they said, well, first of all, it was experimental, it was unclassed, so we don't know what standard to hold it to. And then secondly, they said, and it was flagged in the U.S., so it's not our jurisdiction. But we looked into the records, and even OceanGate said that in legal records in the U.S., they said, no, we're actually flagged in the Bahamas. Hmm. So then we contacted the Bahamas, and they said, no, you weren't flagged in the Bahamas. So it wasn't even a flagged vessel. So they were just operating between sort of skirting jurisdictional oversight, and they were able to do this for years.
Boy. So let's fast forward a little bit then. Take me to that day that when the Titan lost communications contact with the boat on the surface. What have you found out about what happened that day?
One of the things that was stunning for us was to learn that this was not the first time that they'd lost contact with the Titan. And this had almost become a regular practice. And that, for maritime oversight, safety oversight officials, was shocking. We spoke to John Risley, who's the billionaire Atlantic Canadian businessman. His company co-owns those ships that were towing the Titan out to the Titanic site and back. And I asked him, well, what was the contingency plan in place if something went wrong?
Call the Coast Guard. I mean, that's, when you're in trouble at sea, there isn't really a backup plan. You call for help.
Was that ever a discussion when this venture began? What do we do if things go wrong? Do we need to be equipped with some sort of search and rescue equipment on site nearby?
That would have been a decision for, in this case, our customer, not us.
Okay, so let's be clear about this. OceanGate is the customer here. Were they willing to talk to you about any of this?
No, OceanGate has suspended all its operations. We put in interview requests with their board. We got a response from a PR firm handling the media for the company. They didn't want to put up anyone for an interview. They said, send us some detailed questions. We did that, and we got no response.
So we need to remember, of course, five people lost their lives that day. Are we any closer to knowing exactly what happened deep, deep under the sea?
There are two investigations underway right now, one by the U.S. Coast Guard, one here in Canada by the Transportation Safety Board. But speaking with some of the experts in this field, they suspect that the implosion of the Titan was so violent that it may be physically impossible to ever really determine what was the weak point, what was the point of failure that led to this catastrophic outcome. So we may never know. Those investigations are expected to wrap up in more than a year from now. So it's going to be a long time before we could find any clues, if any, at the end of all this.
So, I mean, what more could be done to make sure something like this doesn't happen again or wouldn't happen again?
Well, Will Conan, the Canadian who's in California now, has been a key figure in this, and he's creating something called the World Submarine Organization to promote a uniform safety standard for all sub-operators. And I spoke to him the other day. He's, in fact, been in contact with the U.S. Coast Guard. He's been in contact with Transport Canada to try to push this idea that there need to be global safety standards. Because even certification now, to have your vessel certified, is not mandatory. It's optional. So things like that are now being discussed about whether we need better rules as adventure tourism begins to grow around the world.
Boy, this is obviously a story that caught so many people's attention, and I'm sure your story is going to just fascinate people. So I'm looking forward to watching it. Before we go, we got 30 seconds left. This is the season finale for season 49. Next year is the big one, the 50th season for the Fifth Estate. What do you and the team have planned?
Well, one thing we've been talking about, Duncan, is when we started, back in the 50 years ago, it was a completely different media landscape. And we realize now, especially with our colleagues at W5 over at CTV having lost their program, that there's you know, in investigative shows like ours right now, we are the last one standing on television here in Canada. So what we want to do is really partner with people out there, with the listeners out there, because people who've lost, you know, all the communities out there that have lost their newspaper, radio, TV, local news, and that they don't feel they have a voice to look into the investigations, to look into things that matter with them. So we want to hear from people the stories that aren't being covered in your own communities. You know, what's the scandal that's being hidden? What's the wrongdoing that's going unchecked? So to your listeners out there, if you have a story you feel is being ignored, write to us, Fifth Estate 50 at cbc.ca, and we will investigate with you. That is our promise to you.
And we will be watching the investigation into the Titan. Mark, thank you for bringing it to us.
Thanks, Duncan.
Mark Kelly is a co-host of The Fifth Estate. The season finale of the program, 96 Hours, airs Friday night at 9 p.m. on CBC TV and GEM. You can also find it right now on YouTube.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.